Hello and welcome back. Check tests. We're back on again. Sorry I missed last week, but you know what? I couldn't put together a guest last week. Tried. Logistics, man. It's hard out here. Creative people and logistics don't mix. It's hard to get them to be anywhere and be anywhere on time, and they're always busy. So what are you going to do when you're trying to interview rock stars, man? Rock stars got to be rock stars at times, and they got to go do their thing. So that's what I'm trying to do. I'd rather go with quality for you guys than for me to just get on here and have some kind of, you know, BS session with maybe just me, which sometimes can be good, but I'm never going to do it if I don't feel like I have anything cool to talk about, or if I think that whatever I'm going to talk about is just going to be me, you know, talking out my rear end and complaining and moaning all the time. So it's about some kind of, we got some kind of positivity, some kind of good outlook or something. Nobody want to listen to a complain fest. So, but that's that. That's last week. We're back. We got this week, and I'm excited. Ain't a lot going on here with me. I'm just practicing the drums a lot and driving cars a lot around for Uber and making that hustle. And had a rehearsal with Tyler Summers yesterday. I'm excited to go on the road with Jenny and Tyler later on in a couple, you know, weeks in April, and that'll be fun. It'll be me kind of getting back on the horse after not really being on the road for a while. Not like for real, like weeks at a time, like I have been in the past. I've done one outs here or there, and the Vespers being kind of on a break, so we're just doing, you know, one show a month or something. The band is here or there, but I'm excited to go out with Jenny and Tyler and really put some shows together and play on some different music. It's challenging and exhilarating all at the same time because, you know, who doesn't like a challenge? And learning songs and doing that whole thing, I really enjoy that part of the game. So, yeah, I think any kind of music you play can grow you and make you appreciate different elements about it and different elements about how you play that you wouldn't find if you were just kind of doing the same old all the time. So I'll get a chance to take out some old drums and go play them on the road. What could be better than that? So that's what I like to do. What's going on else around here? Not a whole lot, just traffic. A lot of people moving here, about 3,000 a month is the latest number I'm hearing, moving to Nashville. God bless them, where we're going to put them, I don't know. We keep building things that are very expensive for people to live in. So if you're got a lot of money in your pocket and you want to live in one of these high-rise apartments in Nashville, bring it. Come on. Our roads aren't totally filled up yet, so let's see what we can do with it. It's a great place to live. I talk about it with all the Uber passengers all the time because they got, you know, the same old questions. Hey, what's the fun to do here? And blah, 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 and all that deal. And we talk about how interesting it is to live here, and it is. So that's kind of what's going on with me this week. Nothing too much. I got a guest this week that I had his brother on. This will be the first time I've had two brothers on the show. But I interviewed Josh Taylor a few months ago. He's the, you know, the brains behind the Blimey Cow brand. And today I'm bringing Mr. Jordan Taylor onto the show. He's kind of the face of the brand. So, brother, welcome.
Hello, Taylor.
Yo, I hope that introduction wasn't too awkward for you.
No, it wasn't awkward. I'm just chilling.
Dude, we're chilling. This is a really chill podcast conversation. That's what we do every week, you know. We just try to have just document a real talk.
Yep.
And so what's up, dude? Last time I saw you, we were both you know, dying of sorvation.
Ripping it out there on the football field.
Yeah, me and Jordan play some ball together on the weekends occasionally.
Yeah.
Some
but we haven't been able to get out there in a month or so.
Yeah.
It's been 2 months for me.
Yeah, we hadn't played in a while, so we were both walking like we belonged in the old folks' home the next couple of days. Legit, like when you can't like bend your back straight, like, you know,
there's an issue.
You know, you put in some work when you can't even freaking, you know what I'm saying, stand up straight the next day.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's what's fun about it, man. You get to push your body to the limit.
Exactly.
And see what you can do. And yeah, so if you know Messy Mondays, if you know Jordan's messages, if you know all these things, and you know this face with this voice that I have here, he's a YouTube celebrity in a lot of ways. So, brother, let's just take it on back, man.
Yeah,
so, Blimey Cow, this is an idea that you and Josh have, he gave me a little bit of backstory of just you guys doing home videos and stuff at first, right?
Well, it was, it was, you know, from Josh's perspective, a lot of it was, you know, he was basically the one who was like, you know, we started watching The Office back, you know, when it first started, and it was really him who was like, dude, we can, like, you know, make some funny videos with, you know, this style. And I was just kind of like along for the ride. I was like, yeah, that, I mean, that's cool. You know, my older brother wants me to, you know, be included with something, so that's cool. So, you know, I just went along with it, and then it became really fun because, you know, our friends and stuff started watching what we were doing, even though it was, like, completely stupid and ridiculous. But, yeah, it was just a lot of fun to, you know, have that time to hang out with, like, my brother and sister, because my sister was the one who, you know, recorded all of them and everything like that. So it was just, yeah, it was a good family time.
Well, cool, man. How old would you have been at that time?
Oh, man, like 13.
Wow.
13 years old.
See, now let me make this comparison. Me and Bruno were kind of the same way, except with music.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in high school and starting to, you know, basically figure out that I want to play drums for my life or whatever. Now, there's like a humongous jump between like 13 to like 15 to 16.
Right, exactly.
And so Bruno is still like a little middle schooler punk kid, 13 year old. So it wasn't like cool for me to hang out with him at the time.
Right.
So I really wasn't, to be honest with you. My first couple years of high school was about, you know, learning who I am and coming into my own or whatever for the first time, because he and I had been attached for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you guys were as well. Like, yeah. Two at a time, all the time, and you have sister make it even three.
Yeah.
So, but my dad was like, "Well, you can't just not include him."
Right.
So then it turns out that he's a better musician than all of us. So it just kind of works out a way. But he did too. He started off just kind of going with the flow, sort of, because I mean that was what the culture around him was doing. You know, me and dad were basically who he was around, and we both play music, so it just kind of was inevitable for him.
So did he start playing music because he wanted to be included with what you guys were doing?
Well, I think he had an interest all on his own anyway. Like, he was already sort of learning how to play the piano. And
okay, cool.
Bruno's a fast learner, and I'm sure you are too, but, like, they just catch on so quick.
Yeah.
I wouldn't consider myself a fast learner. Like, I have to learn by repetition.
Yeah.
You know, it's, like, a lot slower of a process. And he's always been, like, you know, straight A's and all that stuff. So he's just quick. But with music, it was like, once he got the opportunity, he just took right to it.
Okay.
You know, he's a very naturally talented cat. He's not a guy that has to practice 2 or 3 hours a day to accomplish what he wants to accomplish.
Yeah.
It just comes easy to him. So I kind of understand the dynamic of, like, being with your, you know, just being with your brother. Just like, well, what else am I going to do?
Yeah.
Right? Do this or sit in the house.
And especially, like, being homeschooled and stuff like that. Were you guys weren't homeschooled.
No.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, being homeschooled, it was especially like that. You know, it's literally just like you and your family, and that's it. So, you know, just trying to entertain yourself and everything like that. It was good to really, you know, stretch our creativity, because, I don't know, just inviting a lot of friends over and stuff like that was really good to do videos, because I really feel like, even not just for us, but for our friends, it really connected all of us to when we look back now. It's like, to think of Blimey Cow as like something now that's shared by so many people, I'm sure is kind of weird for my friends who, like, you know, grew up it just kind of being like something that, you know, our friends did. But now that it's something that, like, you know, thousands and thousands of people are included in, it's way different. But it's really awesome. And I, you know, and the sad thing is, like, as we get older, it's harder for our friends to kind of be included in it, because everybody is, you know, everyone's getting older, everyone has jobs, everyone has families now. So it's, you know, I do miss the days a lot when it was, like, more, you know, friend oriented as well. But, you know, when everybody gets older, it's kind of hard to, you know, keep on with that.
No, I totally understand. And, you know, it's such a pure time in life when you're just, you know, you don't have no responsibilities, really. You just, like, do what you're going to do, you know?
Yeah.
And you have all the time in the world and all that. So give me, you said homeschooling. Give me a day in the life of homeschooling at y'all's house over there.
Homeschooling? Well, I was always the one who would get up the earliest. Josh would get up, you know, probably 2 hours after I got up. And then my sister, Amy, would get up probably the latest of all of us, but I would get up really early, probably like, I don't know, 6:30, and I would just do all of my school until I was done. It was probably like, I'd probably get done at like 10 o'clock or something like that, 10 or 11, if I really worked hard. But then as, you know, as school got harder, I, you know, would be doing school until friggin' like 5 p.m. I would not stop. It was really hard for me, especially math. But, you know, then after we got done with all of our school, we would just, I don't even know, man. Well, honestly, I'm trying to remember what we would do before videos. And it's been so long that I literally can't even remember. No, what we did actually, yeah, bringing it back to football. We would get all the neighbor kids together, and we would all just play football in the front yard, like, all the time. Like, that's all we did. And then after, you know, our older, you know, our neighborhood friends and stuff kind of moved out and moved out of the neighborhood and stuff, that's when we started doing videos, because I think we needed something else to do. I don't know.
Well, I understand that, man. We very similar backgrounds, even though it was, you know, different schools, but we played a lot of ball in the yard too, and, you know, it just becomes what you love. So,
yeah,
but
exactly.
Then, of course, you got to grow up and get into what you're really going to do. And
yep.
And so you guys are just filming. What are you looking to film when you first get started?
When we first, you mean like when we first started filming just in general? Or more for like Messy Mondays?
No, when you first started. We'll get to Messy in a minute.
Yeah, when we first started, I mean, really, like, we were just kind of trying to emulate what we thought was hilarious, which was The Office. So just really dry humor that honestly didn't really make sense half the time. I don't know. I don't even, like, honestly, when I go back and watch those videos, I can't even, I don't even understand what we were trying to do at some points, but it was funny either way.
So Josh kind of described me like y'all did it for a while, then you kind of laid it down, then you came back to it. Is that true?
Yeah, I went off, you know, my brother got married. Actually that was kind of a hard year, or a hard, I guess, couple of years. I can't really remember why we stopped. I think 'cause Josh got a job, and then he got married, and then I went off to college for my first year, and I went to a school in Tennessee. It was like, I commuted, so it was like 35 minutes from my house, which was a long drive every day. But luckily, I wasn't battling traffic or anything. It was just, you know, I got to watch all the people suffer through traffic as I was going the other way. But I was on the cycling team. I liked to race bikes and stuff. When I was a freshman in college and had some success with that, but I fell a lot and I knew I was going to get hurt really seriously. And, you know, something that was going to be a long-term injury. So I decided to transfer schools to go to the school that my brother and sister went to. So I transferred to Trevecca, which was 20 minutes away. So that was a good trade-off of, you know, time. And once I did that and I didn't have the commitment of cycling, that's when Josh was like, dude, let's make videos. And I was like, I don't really want to. I don't really know if I'll have time, because my freshman year was like a nightmare. And he somehow convinced me to. And then he was like, you know, dude, let's just like give it a, you know, we have to try and do it seriously just for like a year and see what happens. And I was like, okay, sure, whatever. And, you know, now it's grown into what it is now.
Wow. So what year reckon that would be?
What did you say?
When would that start?
Oh man, that started in what, it's been like four. So that was in 2012, I guess. Yeah.
Cool, man. So you guys, I wouldn't imagine that everything was real, like all your roles and stuff would have been real clear from the beginning, but were they like?
Well, it was kind of interesting because I was, you know, Josh being my older brother, he was always naturally the director when we were younger. And so when we got older and we started doing Messy Mondays, we just took on those roles again. And, not that the age, you know, our age wasn't as big of an issue now because we were mature now, but, you know, he's more able to come up with stuff like that than, you know, like scripts and stuff a lot, you know, better than I am, like just the initial ideas. And then, I'm good in front of the camera, him directing me what to do. It just kind of naturally played out like that, and it just felt like it was for a reason.
Yeah, man. Well, I'll tell you, it really jumps off the screen that, like, you are really good in front of the camera and at home there. I want to get into this. Like, so I sort of, through mutual friends, kind of heard about you guys and knew about your first run with making videos.
Okay.
But, you know, just a little bit. Like, just hearing about it, hearsay. And, like, oh, the Taylor boys, they always make these funny videos, and it's so hilarious. Like, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, cool, you know. But I never met you guys.
Right.
But then was reintroduced to you guys. I didn't know it was the same people whenever you had started Messy Mondays.
Okay.
So that sort of came back around into our community with the Vespers and all of us or whatever. Because they're like, oh, yeah, you know that's the Taylor boys again. I'm like, what? So it's like I didn't even put it all together because I'd never really seen your faces. But at Messy Mondays, your faces were much more at the front.
Yeah, exactly.
And you guys have done a great job of like characterizing each person. Mm. Like each one of you guys could be a cartoon.
Yeah.
So like you could, Kelly, Josh, your sister, and all these other folks that have been in over time.
Yeah.
And even some of the sub characters that you guys play in the show. So whose idea was sort of the birth of some of these characters?
Oh,
so
dude.
Like, where does this stuff come from, man?
I don't even know. Like literally we would just be doing stuff and then just be like, oh, it would be funny if you dressed up as a grandpa, or it would be funny if you dressed up as a hipster, or just as a really young teenager, or just, you know, a sheltered, like super sheltered homeschooler, you know, that we are. Yeah, I don't know. It's just as it came about, like in the script, we're like, oh, I wonder if we could play these characters. And then it just turned out that like people thought it was funny that we were dressing up.
It totally is
stuff. So
where do you get the clothes for it?
Performance Studios, man.
Really? Okay. Yeah. That's what's up. I was wondering like where you're getting this stuff. So you guys are Performance Studio reps. They need to be paying you.
Yeah, I know, man.
They need to be paying you for that plug.
But it was funny, like the main character that I play, Big Head Kid, which is just this terrible person who just has no filter or anything at all. It was funny because like me and my sister, like back when Photo Booth on the, you know, on Apple computers was like a thing. I would just like turn it on and just start, you know, using the different filters or whatever, and then just making my sister laugh and stuff like that, and my parents laugh. And then when we started doing Messy Mondays, then somehow like I had made up this voice and like this, I was basically doing like a 365, like 365 days out of the year, like vlog of this character that I made up on Photo Booth filters. And somehow that made its way into Messy Mondays. I have no idea how, but that's what Big Head Kid is today.
Well, I'll tell you, dude, it's funny because when you guys do that, when he takes off on something, like here's the problem with Big Head Kid that I have is because when he does stuff, I see myself sometimes and I'm like, shoot, I have totally thought that same thing. Even if you squash it right after you think it, you're like, right, no, right. That's ridiculous. You still are pissed because you thought it,
right?
And you don't, the last thing you want to do is be associated with anything a Big Head Kid says.
That's right. That is
so
everybody's worst nightmare, I'm sure.
Yeah. But so so I was introduced to you guys around the time that you did the homeschooler video. I don't know if that's the first one or second one that y'all did, but
oh man, yeah. Well, I don't even.
The 2012 one.
That was
seven
really,
reasons
really,
that one.
Yeah,
seven lies about homeschoolers. And see, that was so funny to us because a lot of our humor on stage with the band is making fun of the girls or the girls making fun of us, depending on like if we say something stupid. Like my brother the other day spelled banjo wrong, and so they're like. Oh, and then the homeschoolers totally won that night.
Right,
so
exactly.
It's like we're constantly, you know, seeing who can win the day. Either the homeschoolers will win or the public schoolers will win. So right. If Callie doesn't know the capital of, like, you know, something, then it'll be like, ah, you know what I mean? And we'll win. Or if they do say something awkward or whatever, we'll win. But if we say something stupid or we don't know some basic information, you know what I mean? Like
exactly.
How to spell banjo, then they win. So we had kind of had this dialogue going on for the last few years.
Uh-huh.
And so when you guys came out with that, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so perfect because of how accurate it is. So tell me about like some of the stuff that you've gotten over the years when you tell people that you're homeschooled?
And man, just looking at you weird and just being like, why aren't, like, you know, if you're at the grocery store, you know, with your mom, and then their mom's checking out and they look at your mom like they're doing something wrong. Like, why is your child not in school? They don't look sick.
Wow, I never would have thought about that.
Yeah. And then you're like, and then they ask you, they don't ask your mom, they ask you, why aren't you in school? And then you're like, mom. And they're like, oh, we're homeschooled. And then it's just awkward. Man.
Oh,
it's
my
god! All the time. That literally happened all the time.
See, that sounds like such judgment, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, it felt like it. It was just funny to me that they, like, never... It wasn't like they asked my mom, oh, why isn't he in school? They always asked me, who was, like, super young. I'm like, I don't talk to strangers, you know?
Right? Right? You're very strange to me right now. So don't, you know...
Don't talk to me.
So I didn't think about that. There's a little bit level of judgment that comes with that, I guess. If
that's
kind of
what it felt like, yeah.
Well, I never would have thought about that part of the struggle.
Man.
Of course, we always wanted to be homeschooled, man, because we hated
going
to school. Yeah, we freaking hated going to school.
Really?
I mean, school sucks. It starts really early, and you're stuck there all day, and by the time you get out, it's almost dark. I mean, it sucks. So
that's crazy, man. Yeah, that's so true. You get out of school, and it's dark, and then you're tired.
It just, yeah, you feel like you're in jail, basically, and... I never was the school type, like, even since day one, like, I was never in my element learning at a desk with 30 other kids and freaking trying to take what the teacher's saying, like, and in college, it all came even more true, but
yep.
I could fight hard and get, like, you know, A's and B's and C's or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But the hard subjects, I'm going to get a C in it.
Yeah.
Straight up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, algebra and all that crap.
Yeah.
Like, my trick was if you just show up to class every day, you'll get a C.
Yeah.
So that was my trick in college or whatever. But school's not my thing. So I used to beg because I just thought, man, that would be awesome if you could just, you know, you didn't have to go to school. You didn't have to do none of that all over again, whatever. And none of those crazy transitions, switching schools. And
that's why I liked being homeschooled so much was, you know, because I really struggled in math. And I started to do... you know, some higher end math stuff when I was in homeschool, like subjects. But it was really, really hard for me. Like if I had been in public school, I would have just been destroyed because I would basically do math all summer long, almost all the time. Like I would almost just constantly be doing math because it would take me so long to get through one book. Because I just had a really hard time understanding it. But you know, had I been in public school, I would have just probably gotten F's literally. Because it was bad.
Math is one of those things that, like, I've seen a lot of it, and it's like some of my friends that struggle with, like, reading and writing and, like, dyslexia stuff.
Yep.
And even just stuff as basic as, like, handwriting. Like, that's just not a strength for them.
Yep.
But they're just really good with numbers. You know, like, they can really crunch numbers good.
Some people just have that gift, man.
Yeah, and I never was a math person, really.
Yep.
Like, beyond your basic math, like... I need to jump out of the boat.
Yeah.
But like, you know, it always came to me a lot easier to write and speak and that kind of thing.
Yep.
You know, so sometimes it's just, you have a disposition.
Exactly. And different people have different talents, but that's the thing about school. It's like, it's really hard because they expect everybody to be kind of good at the same thing in a way. I mean, I'm sure that's not true, but you know, like, you know, people that are good at math are rewarded way more than somebody who's good at public speaking or this kind of thing. So, you know, somebody like you who's, you know, good in front of an audience and is able to, like, work a crowd really well, that's extremely valuable in one sense where, you know, to you it's not valuable really at all that you know how to do math well.
Mm-hmm.
So,
no, I mean, I don't know. It's the thing with school that as I get older and I look at it and I kind of look back at my experience, I go, well, you can throw a blanket policy out there, like a blanket curriculum, and yeah, like maybe 75% of the kids will be fine. But the other 25% are the ones that are either going to slip through the cracks and never go to college or whatever, or you're the ones that are, when they go to college or they go to start a business, you're going to realize they're a genius.
Yeah.
But like, they just didn't fit in that curriculum.
Right.
You know, like, it's just so interesting.
Yep.
You know, and they're doing the best they can. Like, my wife's in education and, you know, and it's different depending on where it is and stuff, but you just have to try your best. And great teachers can transcend a lot of those problems, though. Like, the more great teachers that you run into and that you get to be around will make the difference.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I found. Because, like, a great teacher can teach you anything.
Yeah.
Just about. Like, I had a great algebra teacher in eighth grade, and I learned it. But when I got in high school, I couldn't learn nothing but beyond that.
Really?
Because it just, one, the quality of teachers wasn't the same, and the stuff was getting harder. Yeah. So, but I believe if I'd had that same woman the whole time, I could have learned it all.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's just a style of teaching, man.
Yep, yep.
So cool. So, public school, homeschool arguments, you know, all that stuff. It's hilarious. But so then you guys come out with this video, and yep. it's so accurate, and we're laughing our tails off.
And then it just kind of blows up from there, man.
Well, I mean, and here's why it worked. Because the public schoolers and the homeschoolers got it.
Right.
Everybody yep. around the world were like, yes, they just got it.
Yep.
The only way something's going to get over that, you know, universally is if it's really accurate.
Yeah.
So what was that process like? Was it just another video y'all posted at first, right? Right.
Yeah. And that was kind of like, at first, when we started doing Messy Mondays, it wasn't scripted at all. It was literally just like reading questions. And then I just off the cuff answered, you know, what I thought was funny. But then it kind of changed to, well, let's script it a little bit. And so that was one of the first videos that we did where we were kind of scripting it. And yeah, so it felt like it was like a different kind of video, I guess, because we had just started scripting it. So we thought, you know, YouTube was so early on, you know, that basically anything back then got shared if it was relatable in some way. Now, you know, you can find tons of videos that would have gone viral if they had been posted 4 years ago, and would have changed those people's lives, like, you know, our lives were changed. But we were just really fortunate with timing and everything. But yeah, I mean, I remember when that video first started getting passed around, I was like a sophomore in college. Like, I was just like up in the library at my school, and I just kept refreshing the page like on the school's like public computer in the library, and just was just amazed at how many likes it was getting, and like felt like lightheaded because I was like, good grief, this is like probably going to change my life. And it did. So it was just, man, it was crazy.
How did it change your life? Go into that.
Yeah. Well, man, that was so long ago now. It's really weird to think about that now, but it's weird to think of a time when, like, I would say, okay, so my family went to Disney World this past week, and I got stopped. Me and Josh got stopped a lot while we were there from, you know, fans, people that had, you know, really like our videos for like a long time. Like, they've been watching forever. And that was just really surreal, where you just feel like you have more of a responsibility in some way. And, you know, not that, you know, that I really, really like that a lot, but it's weird to think now of a time when, because this is so normal now, it's weird to think of a time when that wasn't like that. And it just felt like it was me and my friends that I had to kind of not worry about, but think about. And now it's like me, my friends, and like a ton of people that I don't really have a face to put, you know, these names to on like Twitter or on Facebook or just in YouTube comment sections and stuff like that I know are watching. So it's just a really weird feeling. But yeah, I mean, when that video first kind of was going viral or whatever, I was just, you know, thinking about all that, all when I was in the library, I was just thinking like, you know, it's not just going to be like me and my friends anymore. It's going to be like me, my friends, and like a ton of other people that, you know, because I knew we were going to keep doing Messy Mondays, and I had a feeling that the following was going to, like, you know, because back then, if you had a viral video, you gained a following. But now if you have a viral video, there's another viral video the next day, and people don't follow you as much. It's just kind of a weird place now on YouTube. So anyways.
So tell me about that. Like, what do you think is causing some of those differences?
Yeah, between YouTube old and mm-hmm. present. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's the thing. Like, people blame like YouTube algorithms and stuff like that for how things are searched or how, you know, things pop up in like videos that are suggested and stuff like that. They've just changed a lot of stuff. But, you know, also with like Facebook video and stuff like that, now it's like there's a viral video. You know, if every video is viral, then it seems like no video is viral, really. And back in the day, it's like if a video went viral, it was like you knew that people were going to be talking about it. But now you go on Facebook and you see Facebook video and like a video that just automatically plays as soon as you go, you know, you just scroll down the page and you see that it has 30 million views. And you're like, well, what does that even really mean? Like, back in the day, like YouTube, if you had 30 million views, you had 30 million intentional people clicking on it and you know, watching it. So it's just really hard to like quantify what a view is now.
Okay.
In this day and age. And still on YouTube, it's, if you get a view, you get a view. But on Facebook, if you get a view, you don't really get a view. It's just really confusing. But now everybody is like on Facebook video, and now to share a video on Facebook with, you know, to share a YouTube video on Facebook is going to get a bunch less views than it used to, because everyone is so used to a video just kind of auto-playing, and everybody's brains are just so used to that now, of that they don't have to click. Like, because think about it, if you click, if somebody shares a video on YouTube, I mean on Facebook, that's a YouTube video, you have to just click one time and then maybe click play when you're on YouTube or whatever. I mean, it's just one click, but that just makes all the difference. Like, people, it's just so funny to me that people are so like, you can train your brain so much to just think that one click is just like, it's not interesting enough to you. Like the title or whatever, it's not interesting enough. When before, if you saw a video that your friend shared, you wanted to watch because you wanted to know what they were, you know, showing you. So it's just a different place, different time. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying that's what it is now. And, you know, now people are really capitalizing on Facebook video. A lot of people are capitalizing on the way that stuff is now, especially YouTubers that really blew up, you know, back even before we did. Now it's just kind of one of those things where they have such a big following that YouTube is really trying to promote them. And so it's just kind of like this, you know, self-fulfilling thing where you have a lot of followers, so YouTube wants to promote you. Whereas people that are like kind of our size that don't have like a million subscribers or whatever, their YouTube isn't going to really promote you as much because they have other things on their minds and stuff like that. So it's just, it's kind of a, it's, man, it's just a crazy place. You never know what's going to happen next. YouTube could change something tomorrow and just ruin everything for you. You know, you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's a little bit unstable. Yeah. Sounds like a record business. But yeah, dude, it's so funny because you never know when you're in the good old days at the time, you know?
Exactly.
And you never know, like, the next 2 years from now could be the good old days, you know? But
yep.
So you're going along. Now, all of a sudden, you know, that video gets over a million or maybe better than that now. Yeah.
Now I think it has like almost 2 million views or something like that.
That's pretty crazy any which way you look at it.
Yeah.
So do you think like just the fact that there's like Instagram video and like Vine and like all these other places to, does that play a role? Like the 15 second clip kind of like automatic playing video?
Yeah, it might be. I mean, I would definitely say so. Just people are so used to now like everything being so much faster and faster. Whereas if you go back and watch like Seven Lies About Homeschooling, you would be surprised. Like if you went back and watched that, you'd be surprised at how slow that video feels compared to what you see now.
Okay.
Like it is really slow. We have like no background music really, except for like in a few places. So basically now what I'm saying is if we posted that video now, I don't think that it would be the way that we did it. I don't think that it would have gone as viral as it did.
So you mentioned, okay, it's slow. Like, is there some kind of incentive to go faster? Is that like just to keep up with people's brains or whatever?
Yeah, that's what it seems like now. I mean, and you know, I'm not saying that it's like, you know, I'm sure like we would have wanted to do that video differently now that we're better at what we do.
Of course.
But we just kind of, again, kind of lucked out in the way that people were more forgiving back then about stuff like that, because there wasn't as much content that's out there now. That's like YouTube is a very professional place now, it seems like.
Right.
But, you know, that's not to say that should stop somebody from, you know, trying to be a YouTuber or whatever, because you can definitely do it. It's not like about being professional. It's just about having a good story to tell. And if you have a really crappy piece of equipment and you still have a good story to tell, people will still listen, because now, like, I don't know, for me on YouTube now, that's kind of the thing that's kind of deficient, is like a good quality story. It's just kind of more and more link bait, more and more stuff that's just, I mean, to me, me being my judgmental self, just seems like stuff that's, I don't know, not really worth much. So it's just, I don't know. It's just a different place. I feel like I'm sounding very like what's the word I'm trying to think of?
Like the old grizzled veteran?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm like, oh, the old days. But,
yeah.
I mean.
No, dude, we'll bring it back home here in a minute.
Yeah.
We'll lift it up. This is a low point in the show, folks. We're about to lift it back up and take it back home, though. Don't worry. So, tell me about, because, like, when I first met you and we were playing ball and stuff, like.
Yep.
I guess I was expecting a little more, and this is so stupid, but like I was expecting a little more of the character I see on TV.
Right.
Or on, yeah. Than what I got.
Yeah.
Because you, the guy that I met in real life, was more laid back.
Right.
And more quiet and, you know, just choosy with where you speak up or whatever.
Yeah.
But all business playing, you know, do on the field, but like, you know, just quieter.
Yeah.
And the guy on the screen is like, the personality
right.
of the whole brand.
Yeah.
So how do you, like, do you consider yourself more naturally extroverted or introverted, or how does your character on TV differ from who you actually are?
Yeah. That's a good question. I think I've always kind of leaned more towards being quiet. It's kind of funny. It's like I feel like when I was younger, it was mainly like I hung out with my brother's friends. And then when my brother kind of, you know, moved out and kind of had his life kind of different from mine now, because, you know, obviously we're doing two totally different things. I think I started to become more quiet because it was harder for me to initiate things more for myself. Like, in college, I had a lot of friends, but they were mainly just the people that I was in class with. It wasn't like I wasn't the leader of anything in school at all. Like, I just had my friends that I wrote papers with and that I still talk to today. But, yeah, I mean, I get that a lot. People that say that, you know, the first time they met me, that I was way different than what they thought. But then, like, I always think, like, would you really want to talk to somebody that was, like, that over the top, like, excited all the time? Like, it's just, I don't know, that would annoy me a lot. But yeah, I don't know, I just, a lot of it is just kind of, I guess I'm more goofy with my brother, just in everyday life. If he comes over, I'm just like really goofy. And then when I'm with other people, it's like, you know, I just know Josh so well that I feel comfortable doing that, I guess. So
I got you. So I like wrestling, and they go through a lot of the same thing, I think. Like, they play this character that people buy into and think is actually them, but then if you were to actually meet them,
right,
you could be like terribly surprised at
how
this guy who plays this, you know, over the top hero or whatever, you get off and he's just soft spoken cat, or there'll be this crazy villain character that's supposed to be evil, but like they're hilarious.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And it's just, I don't know, it's just, man, it's such a different thing. And what is it about our psyche that just loves, I don't know, fiction?
Yeah.
And just the idea of escaping to a different place and just sort of living in that world for a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. But you guys do it well. I mean, you play that character well, and it's not obnoxious unless you want it to be.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool. Like, you're controlling it to the point where, like, you know yourself and you know these characters so well that, you know, when you want them to be obnoxious, you can push them to that level. But that if you don't want them to be, you don't have to. So tell me about, like, you have a pretty big social media following, for what that's worth.
Right.
So what's it like, you know, some of the challenges and benefits of having all those people that, like, sort of listen to what you say?
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, it feels like I have a, you know, a responsibility in some way. And also, it can kind of be something that I have to watch myself, because I find that I can be really swayed by what people are responding to. And even if it's something that because I have, like, the following that I have or whatever, if I post something that I think is funny and then people aren't really responding to it, I'm like, oh shoot, maybe did I, like, make them mad, or did I do something? Even though it seems really stupid, like, I don't know, when there's so many other people involved, you can really get into your brain. Like, what if they stop, you know, liking me? What if I did something that made them feel like I'm not who I am, or all this stuff? Like, so I have to really keep myself in check a lot to think, you know what, it's just, you know, I'm doing what I love. I'm really blessed. And, you know, I have such a great following of people that really support us through anything. And it, like I, you know, always say, like, I really think that we have like the nicest following, you know, of any like YouTube community, which might be conceited, but like, if you just go and read our YouTube comment section, like, it's like really, really nice, which is shocking on YouTube. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I feel a responsibility, in some way, but, you know, like I said, I have to kind of keep my thoughts in check and not get so paranoid all the time that, you know, I'm going to do something dumb. So
I see, man. I see. It is a different thing, man, because like, whether we realize it or not, there's always somebody looking up at us, depending, no matter who we are.
Yeah.
You know, there's always somebody in your life, whether it could be younger brother, cousin, or whatever, anything, mm-hmm. you know, just a kid down the street that already thinks you're cool and is looking at you like that. And we have that kind of sway, you know, and, sometimes I think I know I can really long for more of that. Like, I want to be more influential. Like, it's a weird conceited thing, but
I guess.
I do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it's wired in me to entertain. And with entertainment comes this thing of, like, why do we care who the freaking actors and actresses vote for?
Mm-hmm.
But we do.
Right.
You know? Like, why do we care who they endorse in this product or that product, you know? But we do.
Yep.
And maybe that's just a Western kind of American culture that we have going on. But
mm-hmm.
I don't know. It can be just, like you said, an in-your-head struggle.
Yep.
Because I feel like lately, like, dude, nothing I say is even, like, touching the water on socials right now.
Yep.
And I'm like, I remember, you know, in the past, I was much more relevant, it seemed. But now I'm just saying whatever I'm going to say and letting it go, but it's not really drawing much reaction. Mm-hmm. It's stupid how much that affects you.
Yeah, I know. I go through the same thing. Like, sometimes, yeah, like, that happens to me, and I'm like, man, am I not funny anymore? And am I not this anymore? Am I not that? And I'm like, what? Like, I'm basing so much of what I think about myself on what other people, what I am just barely perceiving what other people might think of me, and then it makes your head go into, like, a spin, and which, you know, isn't healthy. So, yeah, so, but then, yeah, I mean, as soon as I go through thoughts like that, I'm like, you know what, it really doesn't matter that much. And then you go through a span where people are really interacting with you a lot on social media or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's just up and down, man.
Isn't it, though? Yeah, it can be just real up and down. And,
yep.
You know, just first world problems, I guess.
That's right.
Another hashtag. So I like the thing where it's like our grandparents went to war. Our grandparents would be like, my grandpa had a lot of Instagram followers. What a difference in a generation.
Yep. Yep.
Man, exactly, that's crazy, man. Bro. So tell me about your music, man.
Yeah. I just put out a CD. Well, it's not just put out a CD. It was in June of last year, which is crazy. It's called Long Drive. It was going to be originally instrumental. Did a Kickstarter because I put out a music video. And I got a lot of support. A lot of people were really interested in, like, my instrumental acoustic guitar stuff that I do. And did a Kickstarter. And then that got a lot of support, more than I could ever dream of. Then eventually decided to put lyrics on it. And a whole long process later, finally, after, like, 2 years, got the Kickstarter completely done. Just, like, a few months ago. It just took forever because it was just such a learning process for me, man. It's crazy. But yeah, it was so much fun. And, you know, even though it took way longer, like, the Kickstarter took way longer than people anticipated and I anticipated, they were still, like, super supportive. Like I said, man, such nice supporters that we have. You know, they really just didn't put any pressure on me, just told me to, you know, do it at my own pace and stuff, because I was in college still and had final exams and all that stuff to worry about. But yeah, I got it done, and I'm really proud of it. I really like it a lot, and hopefully gonna put out some new stuff. After I got done with the Kickstarter, I like felt really rejuvenated and being able to like be creative again, because I finally had that done, as much as I enjoyed doing it. So now I'm still writing some new stuff. It's funny, like, all my stuff kind of starts as being like acoustic instrumental stuff, and then eventually I might add lyrics to it, but like every song basically starts as being instrumental. it's just a lot of fun to just mess around with that. It's like, that's like honestly like one of those things that I would do even if I had nobody that listened or even, you know, gave a care about it. I just really, really like playing a lot. Just kind of really helps me unwind.
Well, I tell you, man, that's how you know it's something that you love. You do it when nobody else is around or whatever. And, you know, that's, music is that way. It's like therapy. It's like free therapy that you can give yourself.
Yep. Yep.
And it just gives you a place to just kind of release and, you know, excuse me, and get back to the, you know, the universe, the planet Earth, the nature or whatever. It just kind of like puts everything else on pause.
Yep.
And recalibrates everything.
Yep.
You know, and it can be addicting too. You know, we just, we get to where we just love it so much that we'll do whatever we can to do more of it.
Yep.
You know, and not to say that's a bad thing, but I think that's why there's so many of us that are out here trying to play.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah, it's a crazy world out here in Nashville, man.
Yeah. Well, what's next for you, dude?
Man, that's, I really don't know, man. That's what I'm, you know, consume my thoughts with, really.
Yeah.
And I kind of hate that because, you know, I don't know. I like I've been saying, like, that YouTube changes so much and everything just seems like it changes so much that it's really hard to know how long you can, you know, ride that wave, which hopefully for a very long time. But, you know, just in case something ever happens or whatever, like, to have something else that I'm really excited about, it's kind of what I'm trying to, you know, while I have this time, just try and figure out what I really enjoy doing. And, you know, right now I a lot of that is music. I'm just kind of trying to figure out something I can do to, you know, I'm not like you guys, like the Vespers or whatever, or you in general. Like, I'm not very good in front of, like, on stage, like, in front of people, like, which sounds really weird because that seems like that's all I do, but I really don't. I just talk to a camera. And so being on stage and performing is, like, basically horrifying to me. So I don't really care to do that, but I really love putting out music and stuff. So just maybe trying to figure out a way that I can, you know, have a fan base or where I can, you know, put out music and even if it's not like full CDs, just have people maybe subscribe to something and then I put out a song every month or two or something like that. And, you know, so just trying to figure out stuff like that to do. I also have another channel that's separate from Blimey Cow that's just called Jordan Taylor Videos. And I just put out, like, basically vlog type things of stuff I'm doing during the week.
So. Cool, man. Well, I'll tell you, you can do it. Whatever you want to do, man, you can do it.
Yep.
You know, you got the drive and, you know, you're going to mess around and create a new way to do it because you don't want to do it like everybody else as far as playing out and doing live or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. Maybe you'll be the one that comes up with a better way to do this thing. You know what I mean?
I wish I could play live, man. It just scares me so bad.
It's scary sometimes. You know, it's like all the rest of us are just, we've just kind of grown a callus for it. You know what I mean? And like, I'm the type that I can get pretty nervous even now. Mm. You know what I mean? So I have to not think about it or I have to, you know what I mean?
Get your thoughts away
from it. Yeah. Just honestly, and it's not like I get into a zone. I just think about something else or watch, you know, YouTube with you guys or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that kind of thing is my escape to where once the green light is on, I'm good. It's just like where you, the further you get into your own head beforehand is where it gets to be nervous. So the less you think about it before, that's what helps for me, you know. Even though I'm perfectly comfortable in front of crowds.
Yeah.
There's still just something about, this is another city. This is another place. This is another, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This aren't the same group from last night, because if it was, we could be fine.
Yeah.
We know they already like us or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just, that's the deal is, but that's how you learn to get over, you know, that's how you learn to get over with people no matter what the situation is, because you've seen every situation.
Yep.
But, you know, maybe you'll come out of a way to put out records in a new kind of fashion.
Man, who can know?
You know, that's because who knows what the right way to do it now anymore is.
Yeah.
We're in this weird transitional period of like, well, this is the way we used to do it. And we're kind of still doing it that way because we don't really know a better way to do it.
Yep.
You know, that's pretty much what everybody's doing.
Yep.
Whereas like you notice, though, everything's getting shorter. It's all EPs now.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to ask you about that just off the podcast or whatever, but I ask you now, like, why is that? why do you think that that's happening so much now? Or it's just EPs and stuff now.
Well, my go-to answer with anything that has to do with the music industry, if it looks like something's being cut back, is it has to be money oriented. So, for instance, like you notice like a lot of the younger artists, the younger bands, like their first introductory thing will be an EP, right?
Oh, yeah.
So if I was a record label and here comes Jordan in my office and I go, okay, well, I'll take a chance on this kid.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still going to like count the cost and be like, well, six songs is going to cost me a lot less than 12.
Right.
As far as recording the in the studio, musicians and all that stuff. So my first thought when it comes to that, being somebody that's not really on that side of things in the industry, would be that they're doing it because it saves money. So, because I mean, I remember when, you know, growing up, there's no Led Zeppelin EPs. It's all just four length records, you know? Now the record might only be eight or nine songs because it was back then. It was like you had a certain amount of minutes on, the front side and the back side of a vinyl, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's how you got like a lot of the stuff from the '70s is shorter. The songs are longer. Some of the album cut songs would be longer. The single would still be 3.5 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like Whole Lot of Love by Led Zeppelin or whatever. There's a radio cut of that that's like 3.5 minutes long. But then there's an album cut of that that's 5 or 6 minutes long.
Oh,
where
wow.
they go into the freaking, you know, big jam in the middle. The psychedelic 70s stuff, you know. So, but it all comes down to that. And like, so... You'll see, when a band comes out with a full length record nowadays, to me that says, well, whoever their team is around them, whether they're on a label or not, is just was willing to fully invest at this point, you know. Whereas at first it was like, well, here, let's do a 4-song EP because we really don't know what this artist is all about. So it's like the same thing with sampling the song for a minute and a half on iTunes or whatever.
Yep.
Like you have to give away. Think about that.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
You want to talk about different things that are challenging in the record business? How about the fact that you can listen to a whole verse, chorus, and verse and part of the dang bridge on Apple for free on every song that's on there?
Yep. Okay? It used to be like 15 seconds, right?
I don't know how long it used to be. I think it was 30 seconds. But to jump to 90 seconds, that's a hell of a jump.
Yeah.
And then when they, you know, like Terrence Clark was on here telling me about, like, well, when Apple decides how much a song is worth out the clear blue skies, ain't well, it's worth a dollar. That kind of stuff, or 129 or whatever, you know?
Yep.
Like that. Man, it just kind of, it hurts the industry and the fact that you sell songs by the single now. So like, for instance, in 1990, if you were a songwriter and you had a co-write with somebody that made it onto a Garth Brooks record,
right?
But it wasn't a radio single, you would still make a good chunk of money.
Yeah.
Because that record is going to sell 10 million copies. Mm-hmm. So even though that song won't ever be on the radio, it was on the record. That's called an album cut.
Okay.
Okay? Or a deep cut. That's what a lot of people call them. So a cut means the song was recorded. So to get a Garth Brooks cut means somebody liked your song enough to pitch it to Garth Brooks. Garth liked it enough to cut it. Okay? So that's kind of the difference. Now it's like, okay, the best record in the world or the most popular record in the world probably won't, you know, if it does sell 10 million, it's going to take a lot longer.
Yeah.
Like, only artist really I think that can touch that right now is like Taylor Swift and Adele. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, everybody else is struggling to sell 1 or 2 million. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And most people don't. I think the first million selling record of last year was 1989.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I could be wrong on that. Fact check me on that, people. Send Jordan some mean YouTube comments. He loves those.
I love those.
But so that's the difference. The industry is just so different now.
Yeah.
So, I hope I haven't misplaced my point too far.
No.
But
that makes sense.
It's just a different kind of deal now. So if you put out an EP, what you would in the best grand scheme of things, you'd want to put out 4 singles.
Mm.
Okay. Because if it's not a single quality song, like, there's no use putting it on there.
Right.
Because you only have a select amount of songs that you can put out. So, for instance, like, I got friends that are songwriters now that are like really successful songwriters in the country music world. And it's like they have enough sway in the industry now to be like, well, if the artist isn't going to cut it as a single, then I'm not going to allow them to have my song.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because if you have a good song and you believe somebody could cut it as a single, I'm not going to give it to Joe Jabroni over here. It's going to put it on the record.
Right.
Because that's going to cost me money.
Yeah.
Okay. If it's not the single, there's a massive money difference than if it is the single on the record. So a lot of times, this is deep industry stuff here, but you'll see guys that are really into that world and be like, ah, they shouldn't have gave that song to that artist. That could have been a single for this artist.
That cost
themselves money by saying yes to that. Huh. But maybe young songwriter was just excited that, you know, Carrie Underwood was going to cut his song.
Right.
But it wasn't going to be the single. Whereas, you know, somebody else might have, Kelsey Ballerini or somebody might have been single. See what I mean?
That's really interesting.
So it that's just, I'm spitballing names there. Nothing in particular and don't read too much into that. But all I'm saying is established artist versus young artist or whatever. So it's just deep, you know, and I'm not an expert on it. I'm just like somebody who's around a lot of people that work in it. And I just kind of overhear some conversations, but I don't work in any of that stuff myself.
That's how I am with YouTube, man. Like, you just know people that, you know, that are more deep into that than you are, and just what they say about what's going on and stuff. You just hear stuff, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, it's valid when you see. But to answer your question, the original question about why do people do EPs, I would have to say, I'll venture to say it has something to do with saving money.
Yeah, that makes sense, though.
Because the record companies don't have the money like they used to invest. Like, if you notice, here's another observation I have. Now, we've really gone down a rabbit hole now. But you'll see bands out, and they'll be like, oh, they only have, like, two people in the band, and the rest is tracks. Okay, at a live show. So why is that? Well, it's because the record company can't afford to put a band around every single artist they have. They're going to put them on the road with, you know, either singing solo, or maybe they'll be like them and a keyboard player and a drummer, and then the keyboard player run all the tracks. But you don't see no bass player, no rhythm guitar player up there, no horn section no more. Occasionally you will see the artist that is like that, but they're a real throwback if that's the case. Like Anderson East is that way. You know what I mean? He has a full band and horns and everything. But that's because that's the way they decided to go.
That's really
the team around them decided to go that way, that authentic vibe, you know? Whereas other young artists, because there's so many, man. Like, if you were the record company right now, you would be like, okay, I'm putting a band on you and on you.
Yeah.
I'm not going to put it on everybody else because, God bless, you know, I'm going to be broke.
Yeah.
Because records aren't selling.
Yep.
And everything's live. It's not that they're not selling. They're just not selling at humongous numbers, you know?
So
it's just a different industry now, and that's my synopsis of it from somebody that kind of lives in one of the cities where it goes on and works a little bit with people that work in it. So.
That's really interesting. Yeah, to hear your perspective on that. Because I've wondered that a lot recently. I've noticed that stuff has changed a lot just from somebody who, like, you know, I'm not very observant to that, but I have noticed.
Well, you're a consumer, so you know.
Right, exactly.
But, you know, like you're doing now, if you're like, man, I'm just going to put out records because I want to. See, you're not concerned with all this other garbage that the rest of us would be concerned with. Like, well, how am I going to promote it? How am I going to, you know, go on the road? How am I going to whatever? Booking agency, all that crap, you know? You're just here to just, man, this is what I do as an outlet, and I want to share it with people because it seems like they like it. So, you know, that's like a purist kind of like cool thing. And anytime you can find that in life, something that you just believe is real and pure and like from the heart, like that's going to be a cool thing.
Yeah.
So
I'm hoping I can figure out something to do with it, man.
Yeah, man. At least, awesome. You know, you already have an audience. You see, a lot of us that play music, we just don't have an audience. And we're striving to get the audience, and that's why we go on the road.
Yeah.
And that's why we, you know what I'm saying, do whatever that we try to do to get popular and stuff. But
with
you, it's like you already done that. You're already a brand in and of yourself. Like, your face is a brand. You already talked about how it's like, you know, you guys are like cartoon characters and stuff.
Yeah.
So you're already over to a certain point, and you already have this social media to back it up with numbers, you know, Instagram numbers and freaking Twitter numbers and all that stuff. So YouTube numbers. So you're just providing your audience with something that they want. That's got it made, you know?
Right.
We call it, somebody told us, they're like, okay, when somebody sells over a quarter million records, 250,000 records, then they have a married audience. They're married to their audience. It's not like a dating relationship. It's not a girlfriend relationship. Like, it's there, it's solid. And the only way it's going to break up is if with a divorce. Okay. So an artist like, there's a huge difference between where an artist like The Vespers is at compared to where an artist like Taylor Swift is at.
Oh, yeah.
Or let's not go that extreme and go, they're artists like us versus like a Gary Clark Jr. Like, Gary Clark Jr. has sold over 250,000 records.
Okay.
He has the sheer numbers, like the percentages of people that buy your records, like your music, and they'll actually come to your show are better for him. Than they are for us because we've just sold fewer records.
Yeah.
Less people know who we are, right? So if we show up to Cleveland, Ohio, we'll be lucky to draw 35 people. But if Gary shows up and let's say 1% or 2% of all his entire following shows up in Cleveland, that's going to be 1,000 people. Hmm. See what I mean? Because that many people know about his music.
Right. That makes sense.
So that's the difference between a married audience and a, you really made it, it when you cross somewhere along those lines, 250,000 records. That's a good spot to be in, you know.
It's a lot.
And I've had the guys from Judah and the Lion on here, a couple of them, you know, one or two of them. It's like they're getting closer and closer to having a married audience. But as much as they've done up to now, like they're still working to get to that point. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I don't know their numbers by no means, but pretty much until you sell over a couple hundred thousand records, you know what I mean? It's always going to be like, gee, I hope somebody shows up to the show.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Huh.
It's just that that's just kind of some of the stuff that if you want to talk about the stuff that we wonder about and drives us nuts,
yeah.
That's the kind of stuff because we just go over it. Me and my brother always, you know,
that's funny.
Yeah. But that's the life. Like you said, no complaints. We're just excited to be in the game.
Yeah, exactly.
Excited to be a part of it and glad to not just be doing something boring all day.
Yep. Exactly. You know, as much as it sounds like we're complaining, it's, you know, very happy we get to do what we do. It's just, yep. You know. When you're in stuff like this, it's you have a bunch of different things to worry about that most people don't really even think about. So.
It's true. And you and me, this is like therapy for us to kind of go over some of this stuff.
Exactly.
It's free therapy, y'all. This is saving us money and it's keeping us out of crazy house. And you guys listening is only encouraging that. So you're promoting mental health by listening to this podcast.
Thank you.
And we thank you. JT, my brother, it's been a blast.
Yeah, man.
Thank you for coming over to the house.
Yeah, I'm glad I finally got to see your house and stuff.
Yeah,
man.
Dude.
It's
we're
awesome.
Just kicking it in here right now and meet the dogs and all that stuff. But, dude, so cool. Thank you for your encouragement. You and your family have been so good to us. And the Vespers and Blimey Cow are like, you know what I'm saying, brothers and sisters in this whole world together. So thank you guys again. So for this week, y'all, it's been real. I'm doing my best to have a guest next week. I might actually just have to do an episode by myself if I don't get a guest next week because I don't like skipping them too close together. But I'm doing my best with this podcast game because I like to do it. This is me. Okay, you said you like to do records.
Yep.
This is like, you know what I mean? This is what I do. I love this regardless if I don't make a nickel doing this. In fact, it costs me money, but I don't care because I've always wanted to do it.
Yep.
And it's fun to do.
This is awesome that you're actually doing it now, man.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
We've been talking about it for long enough. Just got to do stuff in life.
Yep.
You know, just show up to the plate, man. Swing the bat.
Yep.
All right, brother.
All right,
till
man.
Next time, folks. We out.